We learn about treating parasitic worms and new breakthroughs at UW Oshkosh here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Schistosomiasis, a disease caused by parasitic worms. And according to the CDC, even though the worms that cause it are not found in the U.S., over 200 million people are infected worldwide. Join in on parasitic worms, signs, symptoms, treatments, 800-642-1234. John Chan is an assistant professor of chemistry at UW Oshkosh, where his research focuses on drug development for neglected infectious diseases. John, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hey, good morning, Kate.
Good morning. Well, start us out with a bit of a tour of parasites. Help us understand the difference between what we may call swimmer's itch here in Wisconsin and then schistosomiasis that affects millions of people around the world.
Sure. So when you have swimmer's itch, you're getting affected essentially with a parasitic worm that wants to be inside ducks and things like that. But these worms have cousins that live in other countries, places like Africa, and those relatives of those worms, which are also schistosomes, those can cause human disease, but we don't have them here in Wisconsin.
So, and how do they work with the freshwater snails? These are parasites that cause the disease that live in freshwater snails?
Yep, exactly. So these worms, they need two animals to propagate their life cycle. So they cycle between snails and if you have the duck version, ducks, or the human version, humans.
And then, so how does that work with freshwater bodies of water? Because I think I learned that you can't get this in oceans, but you can in freshwater.
Yeah, so the key is where the snails are. Because those are the animals that are releasing sort of the baby worms, their technical word for it is cercaria, that are going to then be swimming in the water and penetrating the skin of either a person or a duck. And so if you're around where snails are, then you got a chance of getting swimmer's itch. Yep.
And this often happens then, or not often, I'm not sure how often, but in under or, less developed parts of the world, like Africa, places in South America?
Yeah, so in those countries, the snails harbor parasites that are able to infect and survive within humans. So in those countries, it is a real big problem. You read different papers that'll give you different numbers, but it's around 200 million people infected a year. So it's quite a common disease there and mostly affects children.
And the CDC says this disease is second only to malaria as the most devastating parasitic disease. What medical research do you think is lacking in this area?
Well, I think what a lot of it comes down to is, this affecting, more than 90% of cases are in sub-Saharan Africa. And it costs between $1 to $2 billion to develop a drug. So I think there's just not a real incentive for the pharmaceutical industry to do a lot of research and development for a drug that targets a disease that mostly affects poor people. And that's kind of the niche then that someone working in academia like me can work on a problem that is kind of unaddressed.
So what happens when it infects people? What does the worm do that causes this disease? What does that do inside of humans?
Yeah, so like we started out talking about swimmer's itch, the larval worm will penetrate the skin, and that will cause a little bit of a rash. And then a few weeks will go by, and the worm's going to take a couple months to mature into adults. During that time, you might experience a fever or something like that. But the bad part of the disease comes whenever the worms mature into adults, and they're able to lay eggs, which then can get caught up inside of the person's organs. So for example, some of the countries that have a lot high incidence of schistosomiasis in Africa, they have very high rates of bladder cancer because eggs are carcinogens. And they also get caught up in the liver and other organs. And that's where a lot of the nasty parts of the disease actually come from, is the eggs. Because a single male and female worm that are mating can lay hundreds to thousands of eggs a day. And these worms can live for I mean, typically they probably only live for several years, but there's cases out there that finding worms in people that have had infections going on 30 plus years. So that's the real bad part.
So would they mostly live in the intestine? Would they live elsewhere in our organs?
Yeah, it kind of depends on the species, the exact species. They might live at different places. It kind of breaks down roughly 50-50 between species that want to live around the blood, the vasculature around the bladder, mm-hmm. and about 50-50 with ones that are in the vasculature around the intestines, yeah.
We are talking about the larger implications of schistosomiasis disease with John Chan, also in relation to swimmer's itch and what he sees there. He's an assistant professor of chemistry at UW Oshkosh, researching drug development for neglected infectious diseases, and in the process of developing a second drug to treat schistosomiasis. You can join in with questions about parasitic disease and treatment, 800-642-1234. Looking more at what we call swimmer's itch here, John, why is swimmer's itch prevalent during Wisconsin's early summer?
Yeah, so when you think about where that swimmer's itch is coming from, you just got to consider the snails. So whenever we have conditions that the snails are breeding and growing, that's whenever the parasites the snails harbor are going to be released. So when the water gets warmer, there's an increase in the vegetation in the shoreline where they like to sort of breed. Then you're going to have those populations growing, then they're going to release their parasites. And if you're by the shore swimming, then you know they might accidentally get in you.
How can swimmers avoid swimmer's itch? Are there any preventative measures?
It's not great. Some people use like a waterproof sunscreen or something like that to create a bit of a barrier, because those worms are trying to get into your skin, right? So if you have a little bit of a barrier there, that might be helpful. But yeah, the Wisconsin DNR website says that in a typical like 100 square feet, you could have 30 million of these parasite larvae because the snails can release thousands of these worms per day. So yeah, if you're in an area that's known to have it, maybe a better route would just be not to be swimming by the shoreline where you see like the vegetation in places where the snails could be.
Mm-hmm. A bit of more yuck factor here, but how does people, if people are going to the bathroom in the water, how would that affect the cycle and the spread of parasites at all? What is the interaction there?
Yeah, and that's one of the big reasons why this disease is a problem in sub-Saharan Africa, right? Is because sort of the infrastructure for hygiene and things might be the greatest, and there's an education component of it too. Because like I was saying, these worms, they lay these eggs inside the people around their intestines or their bladder. Well, to propagate that life cycle, those eggs have to get out and to get into the water to infect snails again. And that happens through pee and poop. So if people have an option to use latrines and things like that rather than going to the bathroom in a water source that's going to propagate that life cycle, it would reduce, I think, some of the incidents.
We have UW Oshkosh chemist John Chan with us, working on drug development to treat parasitic flatworms that cause disease in people and animals. We haven't talked about animals. Join in on swimmer's itch, as it's called, contaminated water, neglected tropical diseases you want to talk about, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with John Chan here on the Ideas Network. We're learning about parasites that can penetrate the skin of people who are wading, swimming, bathing, washing in contaminated water, like some lakes and rivers in Africa, parts of South America. We're discussing how to prevent and treat schistosomiasis and the research connection at UW Oshkosh on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Join in with questions on the potential for contaminated water overseas, the snails required to maintain the parasite's life cycle? 800-642-1234. Chemist John Chan and his lab at UW Oshkosh developing a drug to treat the parasitic disease, and with us for about 9 more minutes. So, John, currently the recommended drug on the market is praziquantel. Is that right? How does that work?
Yep, you're saying that right. So this is a drug that it works pretty well. It works
what was used?
70 to 90% of the population. So it's quite effective, but the concern is then with just one drug on the market.
There's
the potential for the emergence of resistance. So this drug, a target has been proposed within the last year or two, but it's also not really very thoroughly understood how it kills parasites.
So if I understand, then you're working on a different drug, a separate treatment. Is that right?
Yep, exactly.
And then what happens if the primary treatment, doesn't work anymore, or the primary drug that people have been using for decades starts to wane and not be as effective?
Yeah, so that's the real concern. I mean, there's efforts underway funded by like Bill Gates Foundation and things like that to give praziquantel to everyone who needs it in sub-Saharan Africa, which is great. But if you start to give this drug, the concern is that there will start to be emergence of resistance and it might not work as well. And then there wouldn't really be a backup. So yeah, that's why there needs to be a second drug. And like I said, this is also a drug that works against 70 to 90% of the cases. You know, multiply that by 200 million and you can make an argument that even right now there's people that probably wouldn't wish there was a second drug on the market.
Sounds like there should be a vaccine for this, perhaps. Or is there a vaccine possible in the works?
Yeah, a lot of people have been working on that for a real long time. I think that, and the short answer is that there isn't one. I think the part of the reason for that is that these worms, they live in blood. That's how they've evolved, is to live, you know, inside an environment constantly surrounded by the immune system. So they've become very good at escaping and hiding from our immune systems, which might be part of what complicates the efforts to develop vaccines. But yeah, short answer is that would be great, but not one at the moment.
Well, let's take a call now. Lynn is joining us from Union Grove. Hi, Lynn. What's on your mind?
Hi. I just wanted to let you know, we had a cabin up in Crivets, and we used to swim in the lake, and we would have our kids and ourselves wash off afterwards, and we never got swimmer's itch.
Okay, Lynn, you were breaking up just a little bit, but if I understand correctly, John Chan, Lynn said that they used to always, wash off with soap after swimming, and that really, they never got swimmer's itch.
Yeah, that's good to do. I mean, because the Cercaria, the parasites, they might be on your skin, but not have yet managed to penetrate it. And if that's the case, then it's good that you could remove them by washing immediately after you get out of the water. Yep.
What is your path to getting your drug treatment to market? Where are you at? What steps?
Yeah, so right now we have, I'm working with a chemist group in UW-Milwaukee, and we have a compound that works pretty well. And once that gets patented, the next step would be to move that into larger animals. It works in mice, but then, a lot of things work in mice that don't work in people. So then you got to move it up to bigger, like dogs and things like that. Mm-hmm. So but for that work, we'll probably want to sort of pass the baton to a pharmaceutical company, eventually have them license it and do that. Cause that's not really, that's not work that I do. That's not, at a small school like UWO, the kind of, because like I said, it costs $1 to $2 billion to develop a drug, right? So that would kind of be licensed off to a pharma company that would be interested.
You mentioned dogs, which brings me to wondering about pets. Are they susceptible to this disease?
So not this specific
schistosomiasis. Yeah, no.
But the reason why that's worth mentioning is because that's probably the context that many of us think about parasitic worms here, where we're not affected by it. But do you have a dog or a cat?
I have a cat. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, you know, my dogs have to deworm them quite regularly. Otherwise, you know, you can get any number of things, tapeworms, heartworm, things like that. And resistance to those drugs is also a real problem. So ideally, you know, there's the drug that we develop is going to be broad spectrum. Tapeworms are related to this type of these schistosomes that we're talking about. They're within the same fat phylum. So certainly the hope would be that there's this broader market. And, you know, like I was saying, there's not a ton of money for treating a drug in the third world. So from the money perspective, it also there's more money for veterinary applications here in the U.S. Yeah.
Do animals receive praziquantel for any reason?
Yep.
Do they? Yeah. Okay.
So the tapeworms, like I mentioned, that's usually in like the chicken flavored syringe that you give. So like when I had a dog, I'd have to, you go to the vet, they give you the syringe of the chicken flavored goop, which has a cocktail of different drugs. One of the three is praziquantel. Yeah.
That's very scientific. I like the goop. Yes, very scientific there. Talking about the treatment and development of drugs to treat neglected tropical diseases with UW Oshkosh Assistant Professor of Chemistry John Chan. You can join in with your questions, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. John, what about chlorinated pools? What about swimming in those? Can there be a spread of this schistosomiasis in chlorine pools?
You're probably fine there because if the snails aren't there, then you're going to be good.
Okay. All right. So it really is dependent on that life cycle with that snail being front and center. You got to be there.
Yep, exactly.
What other neglected tropical diseases should people pay attention to? I mean, you talk about pets and deworming, but what are we missing out there with neglected infectious diseases?
Yeah, I mean, so well, you mentioned malaria being a big one. There's news recently on a new vaccine that's very promising. But yeah, these are the big broad family of diseases, many of which are caused by worms. So worms that maybe live in your GI tract, things like Ascaris, hookworm, things like that. Not really a huge concern here in this country where we have a good hygiene. But in the past they were, yeah.
So with the drug that you're developing, how does it exactly then treat or eliminate the disease? How does it attack it?
Yeah, so that's not super well understood. This drug is actually, if you ever heard of like Valium and drugs like that,
mm-hmm.
It's related to those. And for some reason, you know, in the 70s, a drug company tested an older member of this class against these parasites, and it did work, but the problem was that it put everyone to sleep as well, and so it was just the development stopped because that would be an unacceptable side effect. And where we kind of picked up was that we found that we could remove those sedative side effects and have it still kill parasites without putting people to sleep, or at least mice in our case.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And now the goal would be to move to larger animals in order to do additional testing.
Yep, exactly.
As we wrap up, we only have a minute left here. What is the toughest challenge as you do this research? What do you grapple with?
Money, keeping the doors open. That's always, you know, if the money stops, then you can't pay to do the work. So that's a big part of most scientists day to day.
Is writing those grants, keeping those grants, because in order to keep the grants, those grants are I would imagine, help paying for the people who, the students also in the lab, as well as the equipment and things like that.
For sure. I mean, whenever I became a professor, I felt like I stopped being a scientist and I became an author because it is a huge part of the day. Yeah.
Is it becoming more competitive to hang on to these grants and get these grant awards?
Yeah, I guess I think of them like lottery scratch tickets. You know, maybe a low percentage for any individual one, but just write a lot and it'll work out. That's the hope anyway.
John, good to talk to you. Thank you for joining us.
Yep, thanks, Kate.
John Chan, Assistant Professor of Chemistry at UW-Oshkosh, where his lab is in the process of patenting a drug to treat schistosomiasis. We have a link to his work and the lab at wpr.org/mornings. Ahead this hour, landfills in America can take years to get approval and are often fraught with controversy, like over NIMBY, not in my backyard. Join in with questions about landfill design, where your garbage goes, innovations in this area, 800-642-1234. News update is next. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.